It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Here in the seventh inning, the Yankees are trailing 2-0. That is the key man.
Hit high in the air to left field. Going to the corner, Yastrzemski. It's over the wall. It's a home run for Bucky Dent. Yankees get the lead 3-2.
Deep to left. Yastrzemski will not get it. It's a home run. A three-run home run for Bucky Dent. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2. Well, the last guy on the ball club you'd expect to hit a home run. Just hit one into the screen. Bucky Dent.
Hi, everyone. I'm Bucky Dent. Welcome to this week's episode of Deep to Left with Bucky Dent. We have a really special guy on this week. We're both linked together because of the big game in 1978, and I'm talking about Mike Torres. Class guy, a humble guy, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. And we've been friends for a long, long time. And along with me is Al Santiseri and John Schwartz. And I can't wait to talk to this guy because he's nothing but class.
This could be a fun one, man. I'm excited to talk to you. How you doing?
Doing great, man. I can't wait to talk to Mike because he's just been a really tremendous friend for so many years.
Yeah, you know, I am too. I've had the opportunity to interview both of you guys about that moment, both of you guys about the 77 season separately. It's pretty cool to have you both on the line at the same time and have the opportunity to hear you guys talk about history together.
I have to say, Al, when I was doing some research for this conversation, I went to the bastion of, you know, reliable internet research, Wikipedia. And I don't know if you know this, the very first reference on that site, on Mike Torres's page, is your conversation with him from 2017 when you guys did the story about the 1977 championship. So you are a trusted source when it comes to Mike Torres.
I didn't know that, but that's pretty cool.
Well, we are linked together forever because we played in one of the greatest games that was ever played in that 1978 one-game playoff. So let's get to it. Let's get Mike on the line and let's talk some baseball about those great years. Mike, good to have you on, man, with Al and John.
Hey, Al and John and Bucky.
How you holding up down there in Tampa? You're playing a lot of golf, I hear.
That's all there is to do.
It's so good to have you on, man. And, you know, we were talking, there's a lot of people, even Angie didn't know when I first met her, my wife, we've been good friends for a long time because people forgot that we played together.
Right.
You know, we talk about Mike Torres and Bucky Dent, you know, they think about the 78 game, but, you know, we played together in 77. If it wasn't for you in 77, we probably wouldn't have won the World Series because you got traded over from Oakland. And I'm telling you what, you pitched some fabulous games for us. What was your feelings? I mean, were you excited to come to the Yankees?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was with Oakland, not there with Charlie Finley and that crazy group. And, I tell you, there was a lot of craziness going on there because that's when Charlie had traded like seven of the main players that we had on the team. And, you know, it was crazy because no one knew what was happening. And then Buey Kuhn came back and made Charlie take all the players back, voided all the trades. And, you know, it was crazy. But I was happy to come there, I'll tell you, because Charlie – the time was offering me, you know, he called and asked me if I'd take a 3-year contract at 100, 100 and a quarter and 150. I went, no, are you kidding? Because free agency was just starting for us. And I was looking at what Messersmith and Catfish and those guys had gotten. And I said, no, I'll hold off. I'm not going to say, well, if you know, you don't want to accept it, I have to trade you. And I said, okay, well, you can trade me. And then about a half hour later, he calls. We were in Anaheim. And Joe Romo, the trainer, calls me over. I was sitting in the lobby. And he said, Mike, Charlie wants to talk to you. And then when I was walking over to the phone, I said, oh, on my mind, I was saying, oh, I guess I got traded. And then sure enough, yeah, he says, well, you know, I'm trying to keep you, but you don't want to accept my offer. So I made a trade for you. And I said, oh, okay, where to, Charlie? You're going to the Yankees. I go, oh, well, okay, that's fine.
That's a great feeling, because I tell you what, when I got traded over there, and I was going from a team that lost 100 something games, and I was going to my favorite team, because I was always a Yankee fan. Who was your favorite team when you were growing up?
You know, I grew up in the Midwest in Topeka, Kansas, and St. Louis, the Cardinals, were really the team that I loved. And of course, yeah, I ended up signing with the Cardinals out of high school in 1964. And kind of interesting because, you know, I, Branch Rickey, he worked me out at the old Busch Stadium when I went to try out for the St. Louis Cardinals. And I was pitching an American Legion ball at the time. In Topeka, we had a high school, probably about 3,000 students. They had a big high school, but we didn't have any baseball. And I didn't even pitch in high school. And the only time I ever pitched was really my last year in American Legion ball when I was a senior, because there was a pitcher that the father was the manager, his son, he always pitched his son every game. And I know my dad used to ask me, did I pitch? I said, no. And, you know, for 2 years, from probably the time I was a sophomore and a junior in high school, I did not pitch in high school, but, and also a senior in high school, but I did pitch in American Legion. I think that saved my arm. So it was funny that, like, tell people that I never pitched in high school, and, you know, things happened all at once. So I ended up signing with the Cardinals. Well, that was the last year of free agency, and they drove us out, my dad, my brother, and Marion McDonald, the scout that was at Washburn University there in Topeka. He was a baseball coach, drove us out to St. Louis, and Branch Rickey worked me out. And it was really something. It was a hot September day, and it was, you know, in that old stadium, you could really had a lot of – with Stan Musial, and I remember, you know, all the players that were playing with the Cardinals back then. 64, that's when the Cardinals beat the Yankees in the World Series. So it was really something.
When you joined the Yankees, you didn't get put in a rotation right away. I mean, you came out of the bullpen a lot, didn't you, if I remember?
It was funny because – at that time, my ex-wife, Danielle, was pregnant and was having a baby. And then when I got traded, you know, I was kind of tired of getting traded all the time. I was kind of a little ticked off. So I flew to Montreal. And if you remember, everybody was looking for me. They couldn't find me. Well, my ex-wife was having a baby, my son, Yannick, in Montreal. And I stayed in Montreal, and no one knew where I was at. And then finally, I guess they found out that I was in Montreal, and because Billy had said in the papers he's going to start fining me $500 a day. So I said, we didn't make that much money in a day.
No, I know.
So I said, well, I mean, I was still hard-headed, and I said, the hell with it. I'm not showing up until they give me a contract or something and sign me and blah, blah, blah. So ended up showing up, and no, they put me right into the rotation. And I was struggling the first couple starts and that, and to make a story, you know, George, I pitched against Detroit. And if you remember, you were playing shortstop, Bucky. I don't know, but Billy, Tito Fuentes was coming up. He was killing us. He's hitting like 800 against our pitching staff. And yep. I don't know, Billy must have hated Tito Fuentes. But anyway, when I was pitching that particular game, I had a good game going after about three innings. And then he's hollering at me. He came up to bat, Tito, and he hollered. Billy's hollering at me, hit him. Hit that son of a gun. I go, I'm looking at the dugout. I'm going, what the hell does he want me to hit him? He's my out man in this line.
Right.
You know, I guess Billy remembered that he was killing us, our pitching staff. I mean, Tito was, like I said, hitting 800 against our pitching staff. And I said, hell, he's my out. So I ended up hitting him. And then Tito's hollering at me, and he's hollering at Billy that, you know, he's racist and, you know, you don't like Latin players and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, Tito's hollering at me. And I said, Tito, just be quiet. Go to first. So it ended up messing up my game, my concentration, and I got knocked out. I think then they went ahead on the run. I was really upset, and I came and tore the clubhouse up. And I got dressed, and I left. And Lord and behold, I'm waiting for the elevator. If you remember down, they used to be downstairs. And I was going upstairs to go to the parking lot, get out of there. So who opens when the door opens up? It's George. George comes out and asks me, what's wrong? What's wrong with you? You know, I traded three guys to get you. And go, well, yeah. I said, but hell, Billy, George, I said, Billy has a problem here. I said, he has like seven or eight starters. You remember that, you know, we had all the starters and, you know, I was pitching every seventh or eighth day, you know, over a week. And, you know, I was not used to that. I was used to pitching every third or fourth day, you know, when I was winning the games in Baltimore and in Oakland. And he said, well, you know, all right, well, let me go talk to Billy. I'll go talk to Billy. So anyway, Billy calls me in the next morning and says, why did I go up to the office? And he was screaming at me, and I screamed back at him. And I said, ho, Billy, God darn it. And I said, those are the kind of words that I was saying, but I was saying a little bit more to him. I said, listen, God darn it. And I said, you know, I came here to pitch. And I said, hell, you don't even know who's pitching and who's what. And I said, hey, I've been used to pitching. Give me 3 days rest and pitch me the fourth day, and I'll do the job. I said, I've been waiting here after a week pitching. I said, I'm not that type of pitcher, man. I got to get the ball and go. Well, and I said, I didn't go up to George's office. I told him the story. I said, he came down the elevator. I was leaving. The elevator door opened up, and I told him, you know, what I felt. And so he said, I guess he went to talk to you. I said, well, yeah, he did. Yeah, you know. So anyway, he says, Billy says to me, all right, you're starting the next 3 days from here. I said, okay, give me the ball. I'll be ready. So he pitched me, and that's when I won seven straight complete games.
Well, you know, it actually makes me wonder a little bit. You hear a lot in the NBA these days about something that they call load management, where, you know, they're trying to keep players from overexerting themselves during the regular season to keep them ready for the late game. I don't know if this was necessarily Billy's idea, but as you look at those seven complete games, is there any part of you wondering if it had been the lack of usage that led up to that that made you so effective over that streak?
Yes and no, I guess. But you know what? Mentally, I was prepared to pitch every 3 days rest and pitch the fourth day. And that's the way, you know, with the rotations that I came from in Baltimore with Palmer and I was pitching every fourth day, him and I. And, of course, so I got used to it. But I knew me, and I knew I was when I had too much rest, I was too strong and probably overthrowing. And, Bucky, you were behind me on all the games that we played when we won those games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a great streak. And, in fact, Sparky Lyle came to me at the end of the season and thanked me, and I kind of looked at him. I said, you looked at him for what? He said, Mike, if you didn't pitch those seven straight complete games, I knew when you got in that streak, I was going to have a day off. And I said, you saved my ass that year, you know, and that's when he won the Cy Young. And I said, right. You know, I knew I had a day off. When you got in that streak, when you won those seven straight, and he thanked me. He said, I want to thank you because I won Cy Young, and I don't think I would have if I would have had a pitch and come in for you. But you got in such a great streak that I knew I had an off day. I had my coffee. I relaxed out in the bullpen and got ready in case they needed me the next day.
Billy had a history of letting starters go. I mean, Catfish. I mean, I don't remember. He pitched like 20-something complete games in 75, I think it was. But Billy had no problem letting starters go. But, no. I mean, to pitch seven complete games in a row, I mean, that just jumped off the paper when I was looking at it. I said, seven complete? You don't hear guys pitch a complete game in a month.
Yeah. Back then, it was something that in your mind, you knew that you could do it once you did it, you know, once you went nine innings, because my first start in the major leagues with the Cardinals, I was beating the Atlanta Braves 2-1. And then Red Shandy, after the seventh inning, took me out. And Del Maxwell, our shortstop back then, comes over to me and says to me, hey, Rook, let me tell you something. Next time, don't let nobody take that game away from you. Tell Red you wanted to finish it. And I said, well, he didn't ask me. He just took me out. I know. But he said, get your mind ready. Go nine innings. That's the only way you win in this league. I said, okay. So that was the mentality that, you know, we came up in the major leagues. And you know what? The thing is, when you win all those games, and, of course, you know, you get a little tired, but you learn how to pitch. You know, right. Toward the late innings, you know, Bucky, sometimes you don't throw as hard, but you're hitting your spots. You're changing speeds. you're throwing a curveball, you know, you're getting hitters out. And then you get into the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings, and a lot of guys used to say, you're throwing better the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings than you were earlier. Well, that's because I got a little bit loose, and I got, you know, everything relaxed, and everything came together. And right. It happened a lot.
You know, you guys were obviously have been friends for a long time, and I think the friendship after the game in 78 is certainly fascinating, but I'm certain that, you know, the foundation of that friendship was obviously forged in 77. People always talk about you remain friends with the people you win with forever.
Right.
You know, for both of you guys, tell me, if you would, you know, what it was like being teammates with each other that year and some of the times that you guys, you know, shared together and what that was like, obviously, before, you know, Mike left.
Well, for me, you know, I mean, I tell the story all the time. You know, as a kid, your dream is to play in the World Series. And my dream was to play for the Yankees. And I always tell the story. One of the greatest feelings I've ever had ever was standing at shortstop, game six, with Mike on the mound and two outs. And looking around going, we got one more out and we're going to be world champions. And that's what you play your whole life for. And then, you know, he threw a pitch and Lacy popped the bunt up, you know, and then I'm going, okay, am I going to run to the mound and jump on him or I'm going to run for my life, you know? But I'll never forget that moment. And that was one of the biggest moments and biggest highlights in my career. To talk about Mike, I mean, he got us there. I mean, he came in game five and like the third inning for Gidger were down 3-1 and he pitched 5 1/3 innings. And then you completed what, two games in the World Series?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you pitch in big games. I mean, and, but you know, that year was really a special year because it was both of ours first world championship.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, the Yankees hadn't won anything, in, 16 years, I believe, Bucky. And, you know,
right.
It was just, I mean, it's just like we coming out of it. As a kid growing up, you used to see and we listened to the World Series back then on the radio and, you know, in the rooms. The teachers used to put the games on during the World Series and the intercom, and we could hear the games. And it was unbelievable. And just the dream of being in one and pitching in one, God, it's just like what you just said. It was one of the most fantastic feelings that anybody can ever have. It was like in cloud nine. Once I caught that pop-up that Lee Lacy did, it was like, wow, it felt like I wasn't even on the ground. I was like unbelievably high, you know, with the feelings,
right,
and the crowd all around you coming, going crazy. It was, and then the chaos that happened, we were all running into the clubhouse, everybody's hollering, and you know,
right,
it was just one of the best feelings that as for a baseball player to have. And it's a dream because a lot of great, great players never got to a World Series, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys. I mean, you know, you could say you've been in one and I've been in two, actually three. I didn't play in 81 because I was hurt.
So the two of you obviously had pretty great seats for one of the greatest World Series performances in history. You're watching Reggie hit these three home runs, and it's not in a vacuum. You know that this is the game that you're trying to clinch the World Series in. So these are meaningful. These are huge moments. What are you thinking 1, 2, and 3 as it happens each time? And Mike, you know you need to go back out there and finish pitching, but Reggie's got your back, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I was happy. I mean, I was out there pitching and you know, and then I was saying, they're probably going to vote him MVP. I should get MVP. So, in fact, Reggie, Old Timers Day game a couple years ago, says to me, Mike, I didn't realize, yeah, you pitched two complete games in World Series. We should have been co-MVPs. I said, well, go tell the press that, Reg. He's
still laughing. And to tell you the truth, I could have been the GOAT in that game because I don't know if you remember, I think it was a third inning that I think Reggie Smith hit a ball to me and I backed up to get a long hop and I slipped in the grass.
That was the first inning, Buck.
Oh, the first inning. Oh, yeah, I thought it was a third, but it was the first. Yeah, and I slipped and I dropped the ball. And
right.
It was the first time that I had lost, you know, where I bent down to pick up the ball and I went, oh my God, I just made an error in the freaking World Series. And then, then I think Garvey doubled, didn't he?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
He had a double and they wound up scoring.
Well, they scored two runs in the first inning. And
two runs. And I remember running off the field, running in the dugout, sitting down going, I could have just cost us the World Series in game six. I was like reeling there for, and then Reggie went off hitting the three home runs. And that stadium was absolutely electric.
Yeah. Oh, man. It was you could feel it was like lightning, you know. You can hear the stomping of the feet in that stadium. Remember how it used to feel? Like boom, 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 boom. Yeah, it was a great feeling, that old stadium. It was, a lot of rocking going on there.
A lot of great feelings there. But it had to be a tough decision for you to leave New York to go to Boston. I know it was all strictly dollars and cents.
Well, back then, because the Red Sox ended up offering me a 7-year guaranteed contract, which I ended up signing only because I didn't know how many more years actually I was going to pitch. I mean, I never had a sore arm, so I was fine. And I pitched all 7 years of the remaining years of my contract. I pitched all the way up to age 37. And Gabe Paul at that time, the GM, he never really saw him, never had any conversation with him back then. They never really said anything to us, they probably do today, to come and talk to the player, or at least call you in the office and what's your feelings. They never called me in. And Gary Walker, who was my agent at that time, who was also Reggie's agent, Gary Walker was a guy from Arizona that never flew. So I had to wait like 3 or 4 days because he would get on a RV and come cross country to negotiate. And it was like, God darn, why is it taking them so long? So I was caught in the crosshairs because, I wanted to stay with the Yankees. And I think with the Yankees, only it offered me was a 4-year contract. And I said, well, hell, that in the extra 3 years, something happens. And they had guaranteed me the 7 years, the Red Sox. So, I said, well, shoot, I might as well take that instead of taking 4 years and back then I didn't know what really the Yankees wanted to do. So, I ended up going with the Red Sox, but you know what? It baseball is baseball. I mean, you're in the major leagues, I don't care what team you're with, you're still competitive. You want to win. I know that, I had the greatest feeling in the world with the Yankees, but then when you go to the Red Sox, you still have that pride, you still want to beat everybody. I don't care where you go or what team you go to in the major leagues, you want to win. I don't want to come out of there losing. But, that's the way it is. And that's the way I felt. And that's why I went to the Red Sox. And but it's kind of weird that I signed I was there 5 years, and then they ended up trading me the last 2 years to the Mets in 83 and 84. So, yeah, I guess you don't look back at it and just say, hey, you know what? I was in the major leagues 18 years. And, who could argue,
Absolutely. And pitching 18 years and never having a sore arm. I mean, those were some pretty doggone good genes.
I still felt like I could have pitched a couple more years. Wow. Back then, they were not keeping guys, up in the upper 30s and that, it was like, the game changed like this today. Yeah. They're keeping guys, in the 30-40-year-old guys just to help the back then they had, 4 or 5 starters in each team.
Right. Well, when you went to the Red Sox, how did they, did they welcome you with open arms, because the rivalry was so intense,
back then.
The Yankees and then now going to the Red Sox, was it kind of frosty going in there at first until they got to know you?
It was kind of a weird feeling, knowing that we just got through beating them and we were competing against them all year in 77. And they kind of a weird feeling, but I'll be honest with you, ever since my last year, I've never been to Fenway Park back. I mean, other than they invited me one time. So it was kind of weird. Yeah, never been.
That's amazing. I mean, one time I was talking to you, they hadn't even invited you back at all. So,
no.
I mean, at least they did get to invite you back. And I think that's a shame. Because,
yeah.
I
won 60 games there for them.
Yeah. I mean, you were a great pitcher. But 78, we fell so far behind. But as we started to catch up, You know, what was the feeling like with Boston? Did they say, oh, crap,
well,
here they come?
Here's the story. We're in Seattle, and this is when Bill Lee got taken out of the rotation. He and I were at the hotel. We got in a cab going to the stadium from the hotel in Seattle. And Bill Lee says to me, Mike, it's kind of weird that Rogers, who was our traveling secretary, because he was supposed to pitch the first game back in Boston right before the All-Star break. So he and I said, yeah, that's weird. How come they usually fly you out, don't they, Bill? He said, yeah, well, you know, they always fly us out a day before if we're going to pitch. That way you get our rest, he says. He starts laughing. To get your rest, huh, Bill? He says, yeah. So anyway, we get to the stadium, we get dressed, and Zimmer, who's our manager at the time, sitting on the bench watching Seattle, some of their hitters hit. So if you remember, in the dugout, it had a kind of a little high ceiling you could hang on the dugout and stretch. Well, Bill Lee went up right in front of Zimmer and was hanging, and he says, "Zim, Rogers hasn't given me my ticket to get, you know, fly home, because we weren't going to get home till like 6 a.m. where he could have gotten a flight and gotten home like around 1 o'clock to get his rest." So anyway, Zimmer gets up. He says, "You ain't gonna pitch nothing." Yeah, right, right. I said, I'm like, "Whoa, wait a minute, what the hell's going on here?" Bill Lee asked me, "Well, what are you talking about?" Go if you want, go ask Buddy LaRue and Haywood Sullivan. You're not pitching that. I go, "Why?" And I'm listening to this and I'm going, "Wow, what the hell's going on here?" So apparently that's when Bill Lee called him Buffalo Head and Gerbil. Yeah.
Gerbil.
So I guess Zimmer was really pissed, though. I guess he just took him out of the rotation. And I'll be honest with you, Bucky, that's a reason I think that we lost that year. It took us out of the rotation, but Bill Lee could pitch, and he knew how to pitch. And even though he was a little goofy and, you know, outspoken, he knew how to pitch and knew how to pitch in Fenway for a left-hander. And, right. You know, he was tough. He had won like 8 games already in the first half of the season for us.
The guy that replaced him didn't win a game, did he?
Yeah, no, he came in for 6 starts, I think, never won a game for us, maybe wow. Even 7 starts. And, you know, unfortunately, that's where I think we lost the division, you know, title that year. Because, you know, we were going pretty good. Teont, Dennis Eckersley, myself. And we had spot starters and Bob Stanley. Of course, he was a long reliever, but they spot started him at times. They had Bobby Sproul, I guess, the kid that they brought up, who never won the game. But that's the way it was. I mean, I think when he took Bill Lee out of the rotation, that did mess up our rotation. It kind of messed us up for the second half of the season.
Bucky, when you hear Mike talk about those names on that roster and how good that Red Sox team was, you know, that was a heck of a team, needless to say. And you guys obviously had a lot of ground to make up. How did you view that Red Sox team and the pitchers that they had that, you know, you guys obviously had to face a lot in September and then ultimately in October, you know, in the one game. But what were the conversations you guys had about the Red Sox and all that talent up there?
Well, the one thing that you know, for us was we were hurt. You know, we had some Catfish was hurt. You know, I missed 40 games with my leg. I think Rivers was hurt. And there was a couple other guys. We were banged up, and they were just flying along playing 750. But, you know, when we started to get everybody healthy, and I think one of the keys was Catfish coming back, because Guidry we knew was going to win every 5 days. And then we had Figueroa, you know, a couple other guys who were in the rotation. And when Catfish came back, then we started to put together the winning streaks. We started to win 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5. And as we started to put those winning streaks, Boston started to get banged up a little bit.
Yeah.
And so got a little bit closer. You know, every week we get a little, we wanted to pick up one game a week till we got to September, because we played them 7 times. And we felt like if we could get to September and we were close, then we had a chance to catch them. And that's actually what happened. But the Red Sox lineup, you talk about a power lineup. I mean, they had some great players.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, you know, we got close to them and we went in early in September and was called the Boston Massacre. And actually, Bill Lee was talking about that. He pitched, I think he came in relief twice. 4 innings he pitched, and then 5 innings. And he did give up a one run. And he said they still didn't put him back in rotation. So, but, you know, I remember, you know, the Boston Massacre and, you know, us going in there. And after we swept them 4, we were tied. But, you know, the last 3 weeks of that season was like, wow.
I mean, every day looking at the scoreboard.
Every day. And don't let anybody tell you they don't ever look at the scoreboard to see who's winning, because that's a lie. I mean, we looked up there all the time to see if Boston was winning and if we had to win.
Last couple of weeks of the season, yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
No, we had, honestly, we had, like I said, the lineup we had. Actually, we won the coin toss to play, and Haywood Sullivan, and you know what, we were built for Yankee Stadium. We played better in Yankee Stadium than we did in Fenway as hitters with power. And you know, you guys, Bucky, had, other than Reggie, didn't have home run power per se. Nettles, you know, would generate some power. But, you know, our team was suited for Yankee Stadium in that ballpark with the power that we had. And then I was surprised that Haywood picked Boston to play the playoff game in Boston, not saying, because we played you guys better in Yankee Stadium. Than
I'm pretty sure someone would get killed if he chose to play that game on the road, though, even if.
Oh, yeah.
Well, George started screaming at the general manager because he picked heads instead of picking tails. Because everybody picks tails, you know. I remember that. But, you know, to tell you the truth, you're right. If we would have been in Yankee Stadium, the ball Fred Lynn hit in the, I think, the third or fourth inning, you know, that ball would have been gone. That's the one that Pinella made a great catch on and
right
in the sun. But you're right. I mean, with your left-handed power. But your lineup was so good. I mean, you know, Rice and Freddie Lynn and Yastrzemski. And, I mean, you guys just could really pound the baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. And, you know, it was two of the best teams in baseball, you know, those 2 years, you know, the Red Sox and Yankees. And of course the Dodgers, you can't take anything away from them. They had a great team, and good defensive team. And, you know, those 2 years at, the 77, 78, the Yankees, I knew they could win again. And I was a little concerned because I said, you know, they got some, even though I knew that they'd been hurt, I said, they still have that feeling that they can win anytime they get on the field. You know, that's
right.
And that's what happened to you guys. And then of course, you know, we kind of struggled with our pitching, the second half when, like I said, they took out Bill Lee out of the rotation. That's where I feel. And looking back, I always have said that because they took Billy out of the rotation, we ended up losing it.
Now, the day of the game, you know, the big game, you know, we, you know, people always ask me what I'm feeling, what I was feeling, what we were feeling, you know, what was your guys feeling? I mean, you guys won on Sunday, so you're coming off a high because Tiant shut out Toronto. We lost.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, you guys were kind of high.
Well, we were happy as hell that we got a chance, at least a chance to you know, come back and you know, a one-game playoff. And then, of course, me pitching it, I was all jacked up. I mean, I was, you know, I wasn't scared. I was excited, you know, because I knew it's a big game. And
right.
So I said, wow. I said, well, let me give it the best I get. That's all I can do. And actually, you know, like I said, everybody, and when I give up the home run to you in this, and you know, after the season and everything, people started booing me because I gave up the home run, you know, to you, the 3 runners.
Right.
So I said, well, I pitched a good game. You know, if through 7 innings, I shut you out. I was in the,
right,
you know, 2 outs in the 7th inning. And that's when you hit that, you know, that little 3 runner. And I'm
right.
Like, shoot. I said, what the hell are they? But they, you know, and I went to a basketball game, a Celtic game, and they announced me that I was in this, boo!
Yeah.
I went, what the hell is this, you know?
Boston fans are tough. There's no question about it.
You know, I'm choosing my words carefully here because I don't want to offend Buck in any way. But, Mike, you make it through some just incredible bats in that Yankees lineup. It's a rough situation because you have two guys on, but What is your thought process as Bucky comes up in the 7th inning? What is your plan for that at bat?
Well, I knew that I was going to crowd him in off the plate inside, get him thinking inside, slider him away. And that's what I was thinking. I said, well, because I never really – never had any problem with Bucky. If he's going to hit me, usually it was a single or, you know, he would get his base hit, you know, sparingly. But I don't know what you ever hit off of me. But I wasn't, like I said, worried at that time. I felt I could control it. But, you know, when you fouled off the ball, off your thing, the next pitch, and I should have thrown a couple pitches just to kind of keep myself, because I had a really good rhythm. I felt good, and I was hitting my spots where I wanted to. So, and then when you came back and you got that cork bat and you Mickey gave you that cork bat. So, anyway, I try to come in on you, and the ball stayed a little bit middle too much. And then, because the next pitch, I knew I was going to throw a slider down and away off of you. And, you know, so I didn't get to get that pitch in my repertoire. But, you know, you hit that to fly ball out to left field. And when I saw Yaz hitting his glove, I thought it was there. And I said, gee, the ball kept carrying. I went, God, darn, that damn ball went out. So, yeah. You know.
Well, yeah. The ball was juiced, man.
But I went, oh my God. But, you know, we came back as a team and had our chances to win that game. You know, Yaz with the guys on base and, you know, just get a base hit, Yaz here. And they don't boo him, they booed me. But it was one of the greatest games. It was one of the greatest games I think that I was ever involved in, even though it wasn't the World Series. It was just the intensity, the feeling that, you know, to win.
I think it was one of the greatest games that anyone was ever involved with. I don't think that that's limited to simply you there.
Yeah. Pinella saved the game. I mean, he made a great play in the third inning, and then in that one inning, he stopped Burleson from going to third, you know, on that fly ball. To right field, it hit and he lost it to Sun. But actually, Lou really did a tremendous job. He saved that because, you know, if Burleson would have went to third, Rice hit a ball deep enough that would have scored and would have tied the game up. It would have been a different ball game.
Bucky, I kind of alluded to this before. You know, you guys play this, you know, this epic game against each other after being teammates and winning a world championship together in 77. You know, you hit one of the biggest home runs, obviously, in history. Off of Mike. Mike has some great years with the Red Sox. After that, you play for the Yankees, you know, for, you know, several more years. Your careers end somewhere along the way, you know, kind of like the ultimate odd couple forms this friendship. Guys who are linked in history, but not together, you know, linked as opponents, I guess you could say. And actually love to hear both of your perspectives on, you know, when the friendship started, you know, after your careers and, you know, just kind of how that went. I know you guys did some events together and I always talk about, you know, all the pictures I've taken with guys I've interviewed. You know, one of my favorite photos is taking a picture with the two of you guys at Bucky's golf tournament, just because it's such a rare, almost piece of history, if you will. But if you guys can just talk about that unique friendship that you have.
Well, you know, for me, you know, it's easy. We were teammates. You know, we played together. We won a world championship together. And this, like baseball, like Mike says, baseball moves on. And he moved on to Boston and, you know, finished, you know, a great career. And, you know, I wound up leaving in 84. You know, I hurt my leg playing in Texas and I wound up, you know, getting released in 84. And I came back and finished up with Kansas City. And I don't really remember after where we ran into each other. I know we started doing some events together, but I don't know how many years, because I started managing in the minor leagues and then I went to New York to manage and then I went on to coach, but I don't really remember when it was that we got back together. But, you know, it was probably, you know, I would say a little frosty at the beginning, but over the years, you know, I mean, Mike has been such a class guy. I mean, you know, it just happened to be that he was on the mound and I was the hitter in one of the biggest games in history, like Bobby Thompson and Ralph Branca. You know, I say we're a lot like them, where we became great friends and we do a lot of things together. But actually, I don't remember how long it was after that game that we actually saw each other and started, you know, doing events.
You know, Bucky, I think it was when they took that picture of the home run and me pitching it to you. That's when it started. We started getting together. They had some card shows, and they wanted us to sign the photo.
Right.
And that's where we became good friends. We laughed about it.
Yep.
And, you know, we joked about it. And I was just telling you, because Bucky, I tell you that Mickey told me he gave you a cork bat.
That was an old timer's day. That was an old timer's day. I'll never forget. You know, we came back for old timer's day, and Mickey came over to me, and Mike was standing a little bit down, and we were talking to somebody, and somebody had just broke a bat and got caught for, you know, a cork bat. And so I looked at Mickey and I go, "Hey, Mickey, would it be funny if you told Mike that that bat you gave me was cork?" And Mike goes, "Oh, I knew something was wrong. I knew that bat was cork, you know." And we started laughing, you know.
Whether it was cork or not, he still had a hit.
That's right. You know. And to tell you the truth, about, 10 years later after that game, I had my baseball school going, and we built a little Fenway.
That's right.
We called Mrs. Yawkey. We wanted to redo a field. And I said, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we built a miniature Fenway Park for the kids? And so we built the wall, and we restaged that event that night. We had about 3,000 people. And that day in the afternoon, I hadn't hit in a long time. I said, I better go out and try and see if I can hit one over this dadgum wall. And I kept hitting and hitting. And I finally hit one. But when Mike was so gracious to come down with Rivers and Rick Cerrone, we had about 3,000 people that night. I get up there and I'm nervous as heck because I don't know if I can hit one out. And about the fourth pitch, I hit one, and the crowd and everybody, you know, went crazy. And then we turned around and I pitched to Mike, and damn if he didn't hit one out, and the crowd went crazy again. So he got revenge on me too. But it was a lot of fun and it was a great memory. And
you can never take it away from us, right,
Buck? They can't take it away. But, you know, I've always said over the years, you've been such a class guy and such a gracious guy about that ball game. And, you know, and it's just a shame that it was just one game. And, you know, and like I say, it was like Bobby Thompson and Ralph Branca.
You know what? I mean, you got to take the good with the bad. I mean, what if, you know, if I didn't go up the home run, you know, we've continued into the World Series, what would have happened? You know, all those crazy things. You just never know.
I agree with you. And you know what I think is really kind of ironic and amazing is, like, you talk about, you know, Bucky getting permission to make a Fenway Park in Delray Beach. I think I would have been a little less nervous had I known that story when I was trying to get permission to bring you back to Fenway Park in 2016. Yeah. a little less skeptical. But, you know, what's amazing is, you know, the Red Sox were so gracious to us that day, bringing you back to Fenway Park so that I could do a story for, of all, you know, publications, Yankees Magazine, about you in Fenway Park returning to the park. And you got permission to do this thing in Delray Beach. You know, it's even more, I don't know, you know, ironic or kind of jarring in a way, you know, that they haven't brought you back, Mike, a guy who won, like you said, 60 games for their organization.
Al, have you never heard about the chip that Boston people have from their shoulder? Is this the first time you're learning about that?
Well, I understood it, but I, like I said, it's still jarring to me because of, you know, they've embraced Bucky Dent, who I always call public enemy number one in that city. Right.
I think there are some books you can read about this.
But, you know, they did that with Buckner and Mookie Wilson, you know, when the ball went through Buckner's. I mean, it was a long time before he finally could get, you know, get back there. And they invited him back and they gave him a standing ovation. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, one day that the Red Sox will kind of lighten up.
Well, they should invite you and I back, Bucky. Yeah. I mean, I don't care about getting booed. I'd like being out there having fun anyway.
We always have fun at old times.
If I was to get booed, I said, "Hey, what the hell? You know, I was in the big leagues. You guys weren't." But,
well, one good thing, you can come back to Yankee Stadium. They always cheer you there, pal, because Yankee fans remember. And you know, like I said, you've always been so gracious and such a class guy. And you know, I just want to thank you for spending this time talking baseball, you know, because we go back a long way and we've been friends for a long time. And I know you got a golf game to go to. So And I miss you, pal. I haven't seen you in a while. And
I know.
We got to get together.
Well, we'll get together. You're in Florida. We just got to drive 3 hours up or 3 hours down. So that's all.
Yeah.
We'll try to get together. Say hi to Ann.
I sure will.
We'll try to get together, okay, with you guys. And thank you guys for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on, pal. Pretty good.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, we talked about some really interesting things.
He really does. That story in that the Red Sox never brought him back. I'll stop talking about it, but I can't believe that. That is crazy.
He said that to me a few years ago, and I looked at him and my jaw just dropped. I said, Are you kidding me? I mean,
Bucky, I just think about that day when we were there and like just how much it changed. And, you know, I mean, I have so many like crazy memories from that day, but like being in like their front office and they're bringing my son souvenirs and he's sitting there with you. And I'm like, it was just it's so crazy to think that. I mean, they've embraced everyone, Roger Clemens, Wade Boggs.
Yep.
You name it, you know, like.
You know, the funny thing is though, like it's kind of like we were saying before, I think there's a before and after when it comes to the Red Sox. You know, there's everything pre-2004 and post-2004. So I guess as much as I kind of poked fun at your comment, Al, I'm not surprised at how they reacted pre-2004.
Right.
But everything's changed since then. That's what's strange.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, the story I did would never have happened pre-2004. Like, Bucky and I never would have been in Fenway Park in 2003 or whatever before that. But seeing how, like you said, how much has changed. I mean, he pitched a great game. He had a great season. He gave up a home run in a hard fought game. He didn't make an error. He didn't do anything like that. And his point was valid too. The team had every opportunity to come back and nearly did. It was just a hard fought game where, you know, a great pitcher in an at bat against a great hitter, you know, the hitter won. Okay. Well, hadn't given up, you know, anything to that point. So, you know, a guy who, when you look at Mike Torres's final line in that game, it's really good, except he just didn't win. You know, if Bucky had hit that home run in the first inning, it would have been a different set of circumstances, I guess. Maybe they would have, you know, liked him more or something like that.
Well, it was a great conversation. And, you know, Bucky, I was talking about the way circumstances can change so quickly. That's obviously a big topic in baseball this week as MLB has its draft coming up. And if you want to talk about just the ultimate in terms of circumstances that you can't control, the draft is really for a player pretty high up on that list. I'm just curious real quick, as you watch and get ready to see these players, these young kids who are going to have their lives changed this week, what do you remember from that experience when you went through it?
Well, I remember, you know, my final year of high school, you know, everybody thought that I was going to play football because I loved football. And just so happened that our baseball team was really, really good too. And I played 3 years because I transferred in and I had to sit out a year. But in my senior year, I chose to play baseball. I said, I'm going to play baseball. I think I can go a little bit farther. We went on and we won the state championship that year. And then the draft came and I wasn't really thinking about it that much, and all of a sudden the Cardinals called me and said that they had drafted me and they wanted to talk to me, and I said okay. So they really came after me. They talked to me a couple times, offered me, you know, actually more money than I signed for, but I felt that I wanted to go to junior college for 1 year. My junior college coach Demi Maneri said, come to junior college and I'll tell you, you'll be drafted higher next year because people will take you serious for playing baseball. And so that's what I did. And back then they had two drafts. They had a June draft, which I got drafted. And if you didn't sign, you went into the January draft, which is called the secondary phase. So I went into that and the Cardinals drafted me again, number one. And so I wound up playing my junior college year and I didn't sign with the Cardinals and I wound up getting drafted with the White Sox. And I wound up signing with the White Sox for less money, but I was ready to play because I had played 1 year in junior college and I was ready to go. But it's always an anxious moment. And I'll never forget, you know, the Cardinals used to send guys all the time to watch me play. And it used to make me nervous, to tell you the truth, you know, because I'd see these guys there and I knew why they were there, because they, back then they called you, you know, they call you all the time. How you doing? You know, you feeling good? And so it was an anxious moment after I realized, you know, that I got drafted once. But I wound up signing and went on and made the right decision with the White Sox, wound up, you know, going through their organization in 3 years and playing in the big leagues.
Well, it's an awesome couple of days in the calendar. And, you know, I can't keep saying it every 2 weeks, but I will, you know, as we wait to figure out what's going to happen and as we kind of wonder what baseball we're actually going to be watching. You know, at least the draft comes around and it gives us something to talk about with the sport. So I know that all eyes will be on MLB Network and ESPN and ESPN2, which are showing the draft this year. Bucky, Al, that was another great episode. Anytime we can just get any of your former teammates, former opponents on here to talk, it's pretty special. But there's such a bond with you and Mike, and to hear the love that you guys have for each other in that conversation was really special for me. And again, I, you know, every time we do one of these, I just look forward to the next one. I can't wait to get together with you guys in a couple of weeks and start all over. So to the listeners, thank you guys. We hope that you will stick with us. If you're just discovering this, please, you know, subscribe and rate and review us and like us and tell your friends about us. You can go to yankees.com/podcast to get all previous episodes of Deep to Left with Bucky Dent. Or if you want to listen to the other podcasts on the Yankees Magazine Podcast Network, which is the Yankees Magazine Podcast, I encourage you to do that as well. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Yanks Magazine. Write us letters to podcast@yankees.com. And of course, subscribe to Yankees Magazine by going to yankees.com/publications. Bucky, Al, can't wait to do it again in 2 weeks. Hope you guys are doing well. Thanks so much.
Can't wait to do the next one.
Hi, this is Adam Ottavino. For more stories like these, subscribe to Yankees Magazine by visiting yankees.com/publications or by calling 800-GO-YANKS.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.